This is Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, House Democrats postpone a vote on the resolution condemning anti-Semitism.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
This is why it's delayed. I predicted this yesterday. They're delaying it. Why? Because they want to give a nod to the Islamists and begin to put little footnotes about, well, there's also anti-Muslim bias, etc.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Every American should be offended. There's no moral equivalency in Western history between anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim bias. There isn't.
And now your host, Stan Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome into Jay Sekulow Live. Stan Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C. Going to be joined by members of our team here momentarily. Folks, we've got a lot to get to today, including several actions that the ACLJ is taking in defense of life across the country. But we're going to start today with breaking news. You heard it in the open. You've heard it from us over the last couple of days. Congressman Ilhan Omar can't seem to keep herself out of trouble. And today, the House of Representatives, led by Speaker Nancy Pelosi, was poised to consider a resolution condemning anti-Semitism. Now, we've told you this story before. The whole reason that the House of Representatives was going to move to this resolution was because the Congresswoman couldn't keep from expressing tweets or statements that were laced with anti-Semitism. I just want to play you one short example of it. There have been repeated examples of Congressman Omar getting herself into trouble, but this is the most recent one, and it sets up the breaking news that we have today. Take a listen. This is Congressman Omar, Byte 30.
I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country.
To push for allegiance to a foreign country, and of course she's referring to her previous remarks in which she said that AIPAC, an Israel grassroots organization here in Washington, D.C., is buying and paying for U.S. members of the government. The resolution today, folks, was supposed to hit the floor, and we told you before, there really were no teeth in the resolution. It was a very generic resolution. It did not name the Congresswoman by name. It did not take action to remove her from the House Foreign Affairs Committee, but yet they were poised to take that vote on the floor of the House of Representatives. Folks, the breaking news, they've postponed that resolution. They've postponed that resolution for two main reasons, from pressure from the left of their Congress, their conference, mainly Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and from the left of outside groups. What do they want? Folks, they want the resolution to include references to Islamophobia. Now, were the comments that Congresswoman Omar made Islamophobic? No. But yet that is what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants to be included in this resolution. And it looks like, Professor Hutchison, that this resolution will come back up tomorrow in the House of Representatives. But I think it's important to remind people the reason the House of Representatives was going to this resolution in the first place. It was because of the anti-Semitic remarks by Congressman Omar. And yet the Democrat Party in the House of Representatives does not seem to be able to find consensus that that should be condemned.
I think you're absolutely correct, Fan. House leadership is prepared to unequivocally demonstrate its commitment to fecklessness and leading from behind. After all, they postponed a vote on a watered-down resolution condemning anti-Semitism. Why? To water down the resolution even further. So the Democratic measure condemning anti-Semitism arguably is useless and a transparent attempt to distract from a serious problem of its own creation rather than deal directly with Representative Omar's anti-Semitism. The resolution is very broad and very watered down. It's simply a fig leaf for the Democrats.
Folks, look, I think it's pretty clear that the Democrat Party in Washington, D.C., and specifically the House of Representatives, has a problem on their hands, and it's rooted in anti-Semitism. It should be very simple to go to the floor of the House of Representatives and condemn specifically the kind of remarks that Congressman Omar continues to make. They were poised to pass a resolution generically condemning anti-Semitism. I didn't think that went far enough, but they couldn't find consensus to even do that. It's a real shame, and I would call on them to change course. If you want to make comment, if you want to be a part of the show, call us now, 1-800-684-3110, and we'll be back right after this.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We're talking about this postponement of a resolution that the House of Representatives was poised to vote on today, sort of generically condemning anti-Semitism. You would think that that's a resolution that would pass unanimously. You would even think that the person who was responsible for scheduling this vote, or for at least causing Speaker Pelosi to schedule this vote, Congressman Omar, would have been able to vote for the resolution that looked like it was going to be put forward. In fact, this is what we call the enacting clause. This was the relevant language inside the resolution that was supposed to be voted on today. It says, resolved that the House of Representatives acknowledges the dangerous consequences of perpetuating anti-Semitic stereotypes and rejects anti-Semitism as hateful expressions of intolerance that are contradictory to the values that define the people of the United States. Folks, that was the entire relevant portion of the resolution that was going to be voted on today. But now it has been postponed. It has been postponed because significant portions of the Democrat caucus, mainly from the left, both inside the House and outside, the interest groups here in Washington, D.C., have said that they did not want that resolution to be considered unless it contained additional references to Islamophobia. There were potentially concerns inside the Congressional Black Caucus that it needed to include racial stereotypes that would be condemned. Folks, they could not go to the floor and take a simple vote condemning anti-Semitism. And I wanted to quickly go to Cece Heil, senior counsel at the ACLJ. You made a comment during the break that this is the kind of resolution that you would expect to overwhelmingly pass a legislative chamber. And the postponement of this, Cece, it really troubles me because I think they're having trouble even meeting that bare minimum threshold that this is the kind of rhetoric that cannot be allowed.
Absolutely. And that's the exact reason why they had to change it and add language and change the argument, because they knew that no one could condemn this. They had to vote for it. So now, you know, we have smoke and mirrors and everything happening to change the issue and bring in, like you said, you know, make it racist, make it about Islamophobia, which, again, there were no racist remarks made. There were no Islamophobia remarks made. This was strictly about the anti-Semitism.
Folks, I'd like to hear from you on this 1-800-684-3110. And honestly, this is not an issue that should be partisan. Whether you're Republican, Democrat, independent, or otherwise, standing with our allies, standing against intolerance, standing against bigotry should be something that all of us can agree on. And in fact, I expected this resolution to be passed unanimously. So if you're a Democrat or if you're a Republican and you want to weigh in on this, call us now, 1-800-684-3110. We're actually going to come back to this topic in a little bit. I do want to move in just a minute to some of our life work. But before I do, Professor Hutcherson, I just wanted to kind of circle back on this issue of the resolution condemning anti-Semitism. We talked about this before, but the resolution itself didn't have a lot of teeth on it. There actually was an action that could have been taken here by leadership inside the House. Congressman Omar sits on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. That is a seat that is afforded to her by Speaker Pelosi and the Democrat leadership. It gives her an opportunity to have a big platform on the foreign affairs decisions of the United States. In our view, that is a seat on the committee that should also be taken away from her. This resolution didn't even go that far. This resolution simply condemned in a generic way anti-Semitism. We're actually calling for a lot more action than that.
Absolutely. So first, we should note that the resolution did not condemn Omar, Representative Omar, by name. That's number one. Number two, the House leadership failed to take concrete action. After all, Representative Omar sits on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. That's a very, very important committee that receives classified information, including information that concerns the nation of Israel. Yet the House refused to take concrete action. The reality is the House leadership is not really concerned at this particular point, in my opinion, about anti-Semitism. They are concerned about a surface claim that they are opposed to anti-Semitism when it is clear beyond question that they refuse to take concrete action, which they could easily take. And it's their refusal that the American people should ultimately condemn.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And frankly, I think they need to hear from the American people. I think voters need to stand up and insist that the United States Congress and both chambers of both parties stand against this kind of rhetoric. It shouldn't be allowed. Not that it shouldn't be allowed. It shouldn't be inclined to be made. Those statements shouldn't be made in the public discourse, and yet they continue to be. The voters need to stand up and insist that not take place. Folks, we're going to come back to this topic a little bit later in the broadcast. And if you want to weigh in, again, the phone number for you to call is 1-800-684-3110. I see the phone lines are lighting up, and we will take your calls here shortly. But while we've got Senior CeCe Heil with us, I wanted to shift a little bit of our attention to some of the work in defense of life that we are doing this week. Folks, we talk a lot on this broadcast about how it's not just talk here at the ACLJ, but we also engage extensively in the courts. We engage extensively in state legislatures and here on the federal level as well. And these few days, the last half of this week is a great example of that. There are three main actions that the ACLJ is taking that I wanted to touch on just briefly. We're engaged in New York in defense of crisis pregnancy centers. We're going to be testifying on Friday inside the Maryland State Legislature in Annapolis on three different life-related measures. And then finally, here in Washington, D.C., we are standing with the Department of Health and Human Services in defense of their rule to deny the abortion industry of family planning dollars. But CeCe, I wanted to start with the situation in New York, because this is an issue that you have been front and center on for a number of years now. New York has, of course, become the epicenter of these hostile abortion bills that permit abortion right up until the moment of birth, really unrestricted with very few exceptions. And of course, at the same time, they're attacking the good work that is done by crisis pregnancy centers, work that we have been involved in defending for a number of years. You've really been at the forefront of that. So why don't you bring us up to speed on what's happening in New York today, and generally speaking, our work in defense of crisis pregnancy centers there?
Sure. As you accurately represent, that New York has been very much pro-abortion and targeting crisis pregnancy centers and pro-life centers for literally decades. And we were successful just a few years ago in protecting crisis pregnancy centers when we got a restrictive and illegal law struck down in New York. But, you know, the targeting continues. So our fight continues. And today we are actually at a hearing once again, protecting and fighting for crisis pregnancy centers to be able to do what they do best, and that's save babies' lives, simply because they allow a woman who might be, you know, considering an abortion or just has some questions, they give her true information and options, and they let her see the life that's growing inside of her.
Yeah, crisis pregnancy centers, folks, really are at the center of what this issue is all about. It's ultimately about saving lives. There are a lot of different ways that that happens. You have to engage in the policy. You have to engage in the politics. But, folks, you also have to defend the people who are on the ground giving mothers real options. That's what crisis pregnancy centers do. That's why we have long been involved in defending them. Great work to Cece and the team in New York. I did want to quickly shift to the state of Maryland, actually my home state, where this Friday one of our attorneys, Ben Sisney, will be testifying in front of the state legislature on three life-related items, Cece. One of them is a constitutional amendment that would enshrine abortion inside the state constitution, and the others are pro-life measures. One is a ban on late-term abortions, which I think is really at the center of this debate, and then the third is an informed consent law that would provide expectant mothers with the information of what would actually take place inside them during an abortion procedure. So Ben will be testifying in opposition to the constitutional amendment and in favor of the two life-saving measures. Just another example, Cece, of how we take this fight to the state level where a lot of these policies are actually put into place.
Yes, we've seen really all over America that the life issue is at the forefront. So we've seen restrictive laws or pro-abortion laws being passed, like in New York. We've also seen pro-life states take measures to try and protect the innocent life of the unborn baby. And so in Maryland on Friday, we have the opportunity to testify before an assembly hearing. And like you said, it's three issues, and it's kind of strange that they're diametrically opposed, where one is trying to enshrine the right that was judicially created. It's not a real constitutional right, but a false, a fake judicially created right to abortion. And they're trying to enshrine that right into the Maryland Constitution. And then the other two are about a 20-week ban on abortion and informed consent. So we will be there at that hearing. Like you said, Ben Sisney will be testifying, and we'll be fighting for life again.
And folks, it's such a great example of the comprehensive approach we try to take here at the ACLJ. Just in the span of 3 days here, we're going to be in New York, Maryland, here in Washington, D.C., fighting for life. And quite frankly, we couldn't do any of it without your support. We are in a matching challenge for the month of March. If you can donate to support the work of the ACLJ, it's, of course, tax deductible. And for the month of March, your gift will be doubled. $10 becomes $20, $20 becomes $40, and so on. Folks, we could not do this work without you. It enables that work in New York and in Maryland and here in Washington, D.C. If you can stand with us, go to aclj.org and donate.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. For those who were tuned in on Facebook or Periscope, during the break we played a video about some of our pro-life work here at the ACLJ, and I just kind of wanted to reset the stage on this issue for you, because I think we are at a point in this country on this issue where there are a couple of paths forward for us, and there are a handful of key issues that I think will determine the path that we take. And the first one really came to the forefront after New York passed a very hostile to life piece of legislation, and Virginia came very close to doing the same. We've seen similar efforts across numerous states, and really this question of whether or not there will be a line drawn at which life will be defended. And we have seen in a pretty vociferous manner the pro-left abortion lobby in Washington, D.C. and across the country take a stand that there should be no line. Of course, the most infamous example was Governor Northam in Virginia making comments that sure sounded sympathetic to infanticide. And the left lobby here in Washington, D.C. has, for a long time, refused to draw any line. And Cece, I wanted to have this conversation with you because it's long been my view that their hesitancy to draw any line, even if it's at a, you know, pretty obvious level where there is a living, breathing child outside the womb in need of medical care, their refusal to draw a line for life, even at that point, is rooted in a knowledge that they know if they have to debate where that line should be drawn, eventually they will lose, because the very first time that a mother goes in for an appointment once she is pregnant, there is a heartbeat that is detected. So Cece, if they admit that a line has to be drawn at some point, eventually they know that it will put them out of business in the end.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. When you read Justice Blackmun's opinion in Roe, he says it right in his own opinion, that if the baby is seen as a person, Roe fails. That's it. And so that's what we're fighting, that an unborn baby, and now even after that baby is born, if we ever acknowledge that that baby has personhood, is a person, then there are rights that automatically attach to that, and obviously the right to life is one of them. And so abortion and the abortion industry then absolutely fails, and they can't have that happen.
Well, you've heard our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, say this many times. It really is all about the personhood. If you can define the person, if the legal rights attached to the person, life will win in the end. It's why we support the abortion, the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which was put forward in the United States Senate by Senator Sass. It's why we support these federal and state efforts to define personhood and to defend it, and we will continue to do so. Harry, a second issue that I think really is core to the path that this country will take on the issue of life is this issue of informed consent. And we talked about it in the last segment of the broadcast, but I really think it cuts directly against the vocabulary that the abortion lobby used. They want to claim that they are pro-choice, but Harry, being pro-choice requires that there be options available. And providing options to a mother requires giving that mother information about the procedure that is ahead and the options that are available to them. The reason the abortion industry always opposes these informed consent laws, like the one that's being put forward in Maryland, is time and time again, studies have shown that when a mother is provided real information, real thorough options that are available to her and to her child, she chooses life just about every time. Harry, that's the real reason that informed consent laws are also out of the equation for the abortion industry.
I think you're precisely right. The abortion industry opposes the United States Constitution and opposes the First Amendment. On one level, they claim to support choice, but in reality, there is only one choice that they support, and that is abortion. And if the abortion fails, it appears that some abortion rights supporters now support infanticide. And it's also important to put this in context. After New York passed its infamous pro-abortion law recently, charges were dropped against an individual who murdered his pregnant girlfriend. In other words, the prosecutor said that after this law was passed, he could not charge the murderer with killing the unborn child. In other words, the laws are so extreme, we have now essentially eliminated feticide. And so getting back to the issue of informed consent, it's absolutely necessary that the mother be informed and have a real choice as opposed to a fake choice. In other words, the abortion rights lobby, which is propelled largely by economic and financial considerations, they don't want the mother to actually to choose to have the child and put the child perhaps up for adoption. These are not things that they actually advocate. In addition to which, of course, they, at least according to some reports, may have an interest in selling fetal body parts. And again, economic considerations seem to trump life and trump the First Amendment for abortion rights supporters.
And Cece, I briefly wanted to touch on one additional topic before we convert back to some of the news of the day, and that's the pain-capable abortion ban, the late-term abortion ban. Cece, science has now conclusively shown that at 20 weeks gestation, a baby in the womb can feel pain. His or her pain receptors are fully developed, and you can actually see, as tragic as this is, you can see the baby recoil when a probe is inserted to perform the abortion procedure. Cece, we are one of only a handful of countries in the entire world, and on that list is a number of notorious human rights abusers that do not ban late-term abortions when a child can feel pain inside the womb. I think this is the third of the three core issues that will define which direction this country takes. It's why we support the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act that Senator Graham has put forward. But Cece, when a child can feel pain, we of course should attach legal protections to him or her.
Yes, absolutely. But that goes back to the personhood issue. At any point, we cannot acknowledge, the abortion crew cannot acknowledge that an unborn baby is a living human being and has rights and needs protection. And so this is another example of, you know, it doesn't matter whether it can feel pain. It doesn't matter even if it's been born. We have to make sure that personhood never attaches to that innocent, precious baby. And that's why they fight so hard against all of these measures, whether it's anything, whether it's early on or whether it's later. They don't care. They just have to make sure that the United States of America as a whole never acknowledges that an unborn baby has rights.
Folks, we're going to move on to a couple of the other issues. We're going to talk about, again, the delay in the House of Representatives' vote on this anti-Semitic resolution. We're going to talk about the situation on the border. We're also going to talk about some of our international work, including highlighting an intervention that we made through our European Center for Law and Justice at the United Nations Human Rights Council yesterday. But folks, we wanted to make sure that you had an update on what is happening in just these 3 days on the issue of life here at the ACLJ. Again, in New York today, engaging on behalf of crisis pregnancy centers. On Friday, ACLJ attorneys will be testifying before the Maryland legislature on behalf of two pro-life measures and one constitutional amendment that's hostile to life. And here in Washington, D.C., working to defund the abortion industry. Folks, none of it would be possible without your support. And I can't think of a more important issue to engage than the defense of life. If you want to stand with us, very easy way to do it. Join our March Matching Challenge. Go to aclj.org. Make your tax deductible gift. Your $5 becomes 10, your 10 becomes 20, and so on. Go to aclj.org and donate today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
This is why it's delayed. I predicted this yesterday. They're delaying it. Why? Because they want to give a nod to the Islamists and begin to put little footnotes about, well, there's also anti-Muslim bias, etc. And every American should be offended. There's no moral equivalency in Western history between anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim bias. There isn't.
And now your host, Dan Bennett.
I think that open is correct. I think there is not a consensus inside the Democrat caucus of the United States House of Representatives. If there was, there would not be a delay in this generic resolution condemning anti-Semitism in the wake of anti-Semitic remarks by one of their members. If they had consensus, they would not be delaying this vote that was scheduled for today. Quite frankly, I'm not sure it's going to happen tomorrow. At this point, they're saying that it's going to happen tomorrow, but I don't know how they find consensus if they can't find consensus on a resolution as simple as this one was. We will see if that happens or not. We're seeing a similar sentiment coming in on Facebook and Periscope. Gene on Facebook says, what is the reason that the Democrats gave for the delay in the vote? And Harry, we talked about this during the break, but quite frankly, it's very simple. There is dissension in the ranks of the Democrat Party. If they had the votes, if they had consensus, they would not have had to delay this resolution.
I think you're absolutely correct, but it also suggests the rising power of the radical left within the Democratic Party. Apparently, Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic leadership fear Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Omar, Representative Rashida Tlaib, and other radicals in their midst more than the American people. The American people clearly condemn anti-Semitism. They condemn bigotry, but the House Democratic leadership is unprepared to face a firestorm within its midst. And as a consequence, they are prepared to cave. And I think this is a tragic for the United States. I think it would be helpful if both parties, Democrat and Republican, would stand up to bigotry wherever it can be found. But now the House leadership is prepared to water down an already watered down resolution so that it becomes absolutely meaningless. It becomes a distraction. It becomes useless. And I think that is tragic for the American people, and it's tragic for our discourse.
Yeah, I agree with Harry. I think the resolution was borderline meaningless on its face even before the delay. There was an action that could have been taken, that should have been taken by House leadership that would have been appropriate in this instance. And I wanted to address that, but we've got a call coming in on exactly that issue. It's Wendell calling from Massachusetts on line one. Wendell, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. The first point is that it seems that Nancy Pelosi and her crew have lost total control of any regulation in that house. I think she's lost control. I don't think she's capable of doing the job. Number two, cannot the Senate make a statement that can be read condemning this anti-Semitism and mentioning the woman that's done it?
Well, the Senate could bring up a resolution. Just a point of clarification, Congressman Omar is a member of the House of Representatives, so this is really an issue for the House to handle. And as far as who has jurisdiction or authority to either bring up this resolution or to pull Congressman Omar off the House Foreign Affairs Committee, that really is a decision that rests with the leadership of the Democrat Party as the majority party in the House of Representatives. They have a steering committee that assigns members to various committees. They have assigned Congressman Omar to the House Foreign Affairs Affairs Committee, they could pull her off. By the way, there's precedent for that. Republicans have done it for much lesser grievances during this Congress alone. But look, here's the indication that they won't do it. This is the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Elliot Engel. He says, I don't think the Foreign Affairs Committee should be used as a punishment for anybody, but I think that Congressman Omar needs to understand what she said is very hurtful. Whether she is on the committee or not is not the issue. With all due respect, Mr. Chairman, it is exactly the issue. That seat on that committee is affording Congressman Omar an elevated posture and an elevated voice in the foreign affairs decisions of the United States. She ought to be removed. Folks, after this break, we're going to talk about some of our international work. I hope you'll join us. Call 1-800-684-3110.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to J Secular Live. We've been talking about a number of issues today, including the fact that ACLJ attorneys are spread out across the country in defense of life. But I wanted to take at least a portion of this segment to shift to some of our international work. We haven't been able to fully cover these in recent days, but there is some extensive action on a number of fronts. And Cece, before I play the action that was taken by our European Center for Law and Justice at the Human Rights Council yesterday, I wanted to just give you an opportunity to sort of generally remind our listeners about the work that happens across the globe. Some of it is through our European Center for Law and Justice, but then last week, obviously, our ACLJ was engaged on behalf of a pastor who's imprisoned in China, an American family, Pastor Saw. Just generally remind our listeners how important this international work is.
Sure. At the ACLJ, we have a very large international human rights practice, and many times we engage through the ECLJ, our European Center for Law and Justice, which has NGO status before the United Nations. So currently, the 40th session of the Human Rights Council is going on in Geneva. So we make written submissions highlighting religious persecution and issues all over the world. And then we are able to actually make oral interventions during this 40th session. So we made six submissions before the UN Human Rights Council, and they cover issues from ISIS, Nigeria, Pastor Saw, whose family we represent, who's unjustly being held in prison in China, Yousef Nadakarni, who is unjustly being held in Iran, and we've advocated for his release before, issues, just general religious issues in China and in Myanmar, where there's just religious persecution going on. So we just did our oral intervention on Nigeria. And that's what Christoph in our office there just presented.
Yeah, and that's actually what I want to play for y'all. I think it really gives you a flavor of the international work of the American Center for Law and Justice. I can just tell you firsthand that the accreditation at the United Nations, as many disagreements as we might have with the United Nations folks, it gives us an opportunity to directly engage these cases, often involving persecution of the church around the world. The bite I'm going to play for you now is an oral intervention. CeCe mentioned that we made 6 written interventions during this session of the council. But this bite will be an oral intervention that was made by Christoph Fulton-Logel, who is with our European Center for Law and Justice. It's on the issue of Nigeria. It involves Leah Sheribu, who is the young girl who is kidnapped by Boko Haram. I want you to take a listen. This is the American Center for Law and Justice through our European affiliate on the floor of the Human Rights Council yesterday. Let's take a listen.
And I give you the floor to European Center for Law and Justice. The floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mrs. Special Representatives, children in Nigeria are facing a grave threat due to the atrocities being carried out by Boko Haram. With over 50,000 children orphaned by jihadist violence in northern Nigeria, children are often preyed upon and weaponized as suicide bombers. The UN must act now to protect children in Nigeria. Reports estimate that since 2013, Boko Haram has abducted approximately 1,000 children, killed over 2,000 teachers, and destroyed more than 1,400 schools in northeast Nigeria. These attacks and kidnappings have been carried out when children are at school and should feel safe. 15-year-old Leah Sheribu continues to be a prisoner of Boko Haram. She was one of the 110 girls kidnapped in February of 2018. Boko Haram killed 5 of the girls, and the remaining 104 were released. Only Leah remains as a prisoner because she refuses to bend to Boko Haram's demand that she renounce her Christian faith and convert to Islam. This action cannot be tolerated. As stated by the UNICEF representative in Nigeria, Mohamed Malik Fall, quote, "Children have the right to education and protection, and the classroom must be a place where they are safe from harm," end quote. Now, more than ever, it's critical that the UN intervene to put a stop to these atrocities. The UN Charter calls for the removal of threats to peace, and the Genocide Convention calls upon the UN to prevent acts of genocide, not just respond to them. Action must be taken now to demand Leah's immediate release and to protect Nigeria's children. I thank you.
Folks, such a great example of the work that the ACLJ is able to do around the world. Again, that was on the floor of the Human Rights Council, an oral intervention by Christoph Fulton-Logel of the European Center for Law and Justice, one of our affiliates. And Harry, I wanted to come to you on just the importance of this work. Our Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow says often that the Ministry of Presence is one of the things that we try to provide all around the world. Harry, if we weren't there at the Human Rights Council advocating for Leah Sheribu and speaking truth about the atrocities of Boko Haram, in many cases, they wouldn't be brought up at all. We have seen how these Human Rights Council sessions go. There are some noble causes that are raised, but in many cases, the plight of the persecuted church goes without voice. That's why we are there. That is why we are trying to intervene. And quite frankly, that's why we need people to support our international work.
I think you're correct. So the unwarranted persecution of Christians is a massive problem in the world. There has been, over the last several years, significant instances of genocide that have been ongoing, in addition to which, of course, children have been kidnapped. And so even though the UN Human Rights Council has a mixed record, even though the UN has a very mixed record, the ACLJ is prepared to go anywhere at any time in order to protect Christians from unwarranted persecution, including genocide and kidnapping. And I think this is a perfect illustration of our capability to mount a defense of Ms. Sheribu on an international stage, and I think our listeners should be well aware of our activities in this arena.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And Cece, I want to talk about one of these issues that is a little bit closer to home, a family that has lives and is from North Carolina, the Saw family, who you and I had the honor of being with here in Washington, D.C. Last week to advocate for their husband and father, Pastor John Saw, who's a legal permanent resident of the United States, but for 30 years has done mission work in China and in Burma. He has been now wrongfully imprisoned for more than 2 years now. The anniversary of that imprisonment just passed. We had the honor of being with Pastor Saw's family here in D.C. To advocate for his release. So this work, this international work that we do, sometimes it takes us to Geneva, sometimes it takes us to New York, but then sometimes it brings us back here to Washington, D.C. to lobby or to advocate for our government to intervene on behalf of our citizens or American families who are wrongfully detained abroad.
Yes, there's many facets of our international work. And, being in D.C., being able to set up meetings for us directly with key players, key congressmen, key senators, with the State Department, with the Vice President's office, that's very important, especially when we have someone from the United States, a legal permanent resident, Pastor Saw is, and his family, all U.S. residents and from North Carolina. So it's wonderful to be able to engage our government at such a high level. But what is great about our international efforts and being an NGO through the European Center for Law and Justice is we do get to then address this on a world level. And, you know, when you're able to bring this to the Human Rights Council in Geneva, and we will be there next week, and Pastor Saw's wife will actually be able to give personal testimony there. She'll do the oral intervention. Typically people are listening to these things and they have, you know, someone interpreting in their ear and they don't turn around. But as soon as you have a family member start speaking about their father or their husband, literally you will see the member states turn around and look, and it becomes personal. And we will actually have member states then come up and talk to us and say, how can I help? How can I help engage and, you know, get Pastor Saw out? So we're hopeful that we're going to see Pastor Saw, that China will do the right thing, and we'll see Pastor Saw released very soon.
Yeah, these are powerful moments, Cece, in these international bodies when the family members of people who are wrongfully detained shine light on a situation like that. I think many times these situations exist because there's darkness on them. They're not exposed to the light and the attention of the world. Having a family member in the chamber highlighting the case certainly shines a light on it. Quite frankly, that was part of the purpose of having the Saw family here in Washington, D.C. Last week, was to make sure that members of the United States government could put a face with a name, could put a face with the story of the persecuted church. And just by the way, I did want to mention, tomorrow on this broadcast, you're actually going to have the opportunity to hear from Pastor John Saw's son, Ben. Ben and I had a very candid conversation last week about how he sees his father's situation as the situation that Paul faced in 2 Timothy, where Paul talks about being in chains for the gospel. He said, the same situation for my father. He's in chains for the gospel, and those of us who are free need to advocate for him. That's a passage that I have often referenced when we've engaged these cases. I think it's certainly applicable to Pastor Saw's case. So you'll get a chance to hear from Ben tomorrow on the broadcast. I hope you will tune in. In the next segment of the broadcast, folks, we're going to talk about the national emergency on our southern border, and we're also going to take your calls. 1-800-684-3110 on any of the topics we've covered today. We will be able to get to your call. We do have a few lines open. 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey folks, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. In this segment of the broadcast, we are going to take your phone calls on any of the topics we have covered. 1-800-684-3110 to be a part of the broadcast. I do also want to quickly get to the situation involving the national emergency on our southern border in just a minute. But I want to start this segment with John, who's calling in from Minnesota on line two. John, I know you've been holding on for a while. Appreciate you hanging in there. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. And I just want to say that you guys are warriors. And I want to commend Cece today. She's fantastic. Hope she never leaves ACLJ. My quote or comment is on the little issue that we have here with the anti-Semitic resolution. I would not be surprised if this would actually flip right around. I know that's hard to believe, but given the last few weeks, you know, and infanticide and all these things, I think there's three groups that are under barrage right now in America, and that's Christians, Jews, and babies. I think that's where the war is. I wouldn't be surprised if they would actually flip it to the point where it's going to be all about Islamophobia. What do you guys think of that?
Well, John, I'll just make a couple of comments. First, on your comments about Cece, if you think she's a warrior now, you should see her inside at some of these congressional meetings. She gets the job done, and I'm with you. I hope she never leaves the ACLJ. I'm honored to work with her. But, Harry, I wanted to come to you on the question about the anti-Semitic resolution. I actually think that John might be right on this. I actually think the resolution might get pulled altogether because of a lack of consensus. And if it does get rescheduled, if there is a vote, I wonder how much it's actually going to reference the underlying comments that actually necessitated the resolution in the first place. Or is it going to be watered down and include every single instance of intolerance that they might be able to think to list, even though there's not a recent example of that being a problem inside their chamber? What do you think is most likely on that?
Well, I think John's analysis is spot on. I believe that the Democrats are poised to redraft the resolution so that it focuses more on anti-Muslim comments rather than the comments which triggered the resolution in the first place. This move, in my judgment, will be precipitated by the freshman congressmen and women who are drawn to the radical left. So apparently, House Speaker Pelosi fears Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Omar, Representative Tlaib, and others on the radical left more than the American people. That's number one. Number two, we should keep in mind what we've said before. Rather than draft a resolution which is feckless on its face, House Speaker Pelosi could do something that is entirely concrete. She could remove Representative Omar from the House Foreign Relations Committee. That would be real action. But it appears that the House leadership, rather than engage in real action, is prepared to offer a fig leaf to the American people, and the American people should reject it.
There's a real problem here, folks. This is not just a political problem, even though one party inside the House of Representatives is treating it as a political problem that they must navigate. This is a real problem of anti-Semitism existing inside the chamber. And Harry is absolutely correct. There should be a concrete action taken. She should no longer have an elevated voice in the foreign affairs decisions of the United States. She should be removed from that committee. And he is correct. The House leadership could take that concrete step today. They don't have to wait for tomorrow. They don't have to have consensus inside their conference. They don't have to have the approval of the House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman. Speaker Pelosi could take that action today, and we call her to do it. Let's go right back to the phones. Let's go to John, who's calling in from Washington on line three. John, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. What a great job you all do on behalf of so many issues that come up for the importance of defending life, truth, and righteousness. And I am just reminded how much how things would be without the presence of the ACLJ defending all these important issues.
Well, John, I really appreciate that, and I would just echo it right back at you. I mean, I can say it, tell you firsthand that the work of the ACLJ in Washington, D.C. wouldn't be possible without you and all of those who stand with us, because when we go into a member of Congress's office, they do care about what the opinion of the ACLJ is. We've got a long track record of legal work that they respect, but they care even more about what their voters, you, have to say. And when you stand with us, and when you sign our petitions, and when you work with us to engage the government of the United States, it makes a real difference. And Cece, honestly, we see this on our cases all around the world, but especially on these persecution cases. When we go into a member of Congress's office with the family of one of their constituents who is in need of their assistance, they stand up and take notice. So that partnership is critical in all of our work.
Yeah, we could not do this without our supporters. We couldn't do this work at all. And I say this almost every time I'm on the radio. I have people ask me constantly, does it really matter if we sign those petitions? Does it really help? What does it do? And it so does, so that when we go before the Human Rights Council, or when we're standing in the vice president's office, or when we're talking to a senator, we're able to say, not only are we doing this for our client, but we're also doing this on behalf of over 500,000 Americans who have signed this petition, who have said it's important to them. And that makes all the difference in the world. It's not just the ACLJ. It is literally, we are able to do that because of our supporters, and then they also help us with drawing attention to these matters.
Yeah, and we didn't have time to get to the border issue today, folks, but just quickly, the Customs and Border Patrol and the Secretary of Homeland Security are testifying today. Harry, it is unequivocally clear that there is a national emergency on our southern border. The Senate is going to take up a resolution of disapproval sometime soon. But honestly, it fell 40 votes short of the margin needed to override a veto in the House of Representatives. So that issue is going to resolve itself in just a matter of time. But just very quickly, maybe 30 seconds or so, the fact that there is a national emergency on our border is now an unequivocal fact.
I think you're absolutely correct, Than. Conclusive evidence mounts showing that there is indeed a crisis on our southern border. Even the New York Times and the Washington Post admit as much. NBC News is also reporting that there is a crisis on our southern border. And so while Congress has difficulty appropriating $5.7 billion as a down payment on the wall, forcing the president to exercise his emergency powers in the face of the crisis, Congress is also now prepared to consider, apparently, a $90 trillion Green New Deal, which makes no economic or rational sense. So I think we have our priorities wrong in Washington, and the American people should sit up and take notice of that.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll also keep an eye on what happens with this anti-Semitic resolution if a vote actually happens in the House of Representatives tomorrow. But as we close the broadcast today, I want to ask you to do a couple of things for me. First of all, be in prayer for our teams that are advocating for life across the country. Be in prayer for our team in New York today, our team that'll be in Maryland on Friday. asked that they would be guided and that they would be good advocates in defense of life. And folks, the second thing I would ask, join our work here at the ACLJ. You've heard a wide smattering of the work that we do all across the globe just during today's broadcast. You can find more at aclj.org. But if you want to partner with us in that work, join our matching challenge for the month of March. Your donation will be doubled. You can do it very easily at aclj.org. It's tax deductible. Just go to aclj.org and stand with the ACLJ. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.